And welcome back to Coast. I'm live in Boise, Idaho. Major event tomorrow. It's my first time in Boise, by the way. And for what I could see, it's a gorgeous city. Capital of Idaho. Really is. So we're going to continue this hour. Next hour, we're going to have open lines. But we're going to continue this hour with friends and associates of the late Dr. Roger Lear. He died a little more than a week ago. And Dr. Lear, of course, was an expert in implant removal. I can't say alien, but they were very, very strange. So we're going to come back. Stanton Friedman up next with us on Coast to Coast AM. Well, I call him the father of modern-day ufology, Stanton Friedman, who also happens to be in Boise, Idaho. He's got a long day tomorrow. He's going to be on the panel with me at this special event. But I did want to get Stanton in here to talk about the life of Roger Lear for a few minutes. Stan, busy day for you, my friend, huh?
Yeah, and the time change, remember, I started off in Atlantic time, which most people have never heard of.
You've been all over the map, so I'm going to see you tomorrow. Yep. I wanted to go to you now so you can get some sleep.
Good.
But, Stan, tell me a little bit about your association with Dr. Roger Lear.
Well, I knew Roger for maybe 20 years. I'd see him in California when I was traveling out there, and I'd see him at conferences and stuff. We'd talk. I was particularly intrigued because he wanted to get scientific data about the implants and find out, you know, what are they made of? Do they put a signal out? And because of him, I did some checking and found that there was a company in New Jersey back many years ago that would sell you little tiny devices that you could put in your dog or your cow or in people for that matter. And when you put a transponder near them, you know, just like airplanes with radar, it would broadcast information to you, so you'd be able to say which cow it was or which animal it was or, you know, stuff like that. And if we could do that, then imagine how much more information aliens would be getting from us. So Roger went after, I know he talked with a couple of research institutes, got them to do some very interesting work. And Roger had guts, courage, if you want to put it that way. You know, there aren't many doctors who want to get involved in UFOs. You can think of John Mack, maybe, and Ben Simon. It's a fairly short list after that. There are PhDs, but not many medical types. And I do remember strange experience. Dick Hall, who was an outstanding researcher for many years, Dick Hall, wrote the UFO evidence, was very active with NICAP and stuff. But he hadn't bothered to check on what a podiatrist is. And so he was thinking that this is some kind of a quack group, you know, self-made titles of somebody doesn't mean anything. And the funny thing was, where he lived, the headquarters of the American Podiatry Association, whatever its full name is, was, you know, within like 50 miles of where Dick lived. I had to inform him of that. So, and I also have to tell people that Roger was working with other surgeons. They would do the extractions when it wasn't in the foot. You know, he was sticking by the rules of the game. And he was courageous about doing that at a time when not many people have guts enough to stick their neck out.
You are right. You're one of the few, too, Stan. I mean, you've been doing it a long time, but you're right. Roger Lear would just, I think it affected his career when he pushed himself into the alien implant. I think it hurt his podiatry business.
Well, I think it did, too, and you know, fortunately, I didn't have to worry about that. Once I was working for myself, my boss didn't mind my being in the ufological business. But so Roger, we'll miss him. I think he was just a couple years younger than I was, maybe. But, you know, I'm one of the old guys, and we've lost other of the elite. But folks both live to be 90, and I'm going to try to keep up with them. So I
good
got 10
you.
Years to
okay.
go. This year I turned the big 8-0.
Well, I shall see you in a few hours.
Yes, you will. I'll get some sleep beforehand, too.
You got it, my friend. Okay, that's Stanton Friedman. Stan was my very first radio interview back in 1971 in Detroit. It was just an amazing event for me. I had seen a little newspaper article that this former nuclear physicist was going to be talking at a university about UFOs. And so I went to my news director. I was 21 years old. And I said, oh, I want to cover this. And he said, no, we don't do UFOs. There's no future in UFOs on this station. And I went, well, I still want to cover it. And he says, you can do it on your own time. And I did. And I went and videotaped Stan. They had a tape recorder. I audio taped him too. And it was fun. It was actually a film camera at the time. I didn't have videotape. And he was just a great interview. And, I'm looking forward to seeing him in a few hours at this event. But Roger Lear, of course, was a giant. And not a lot of people knew him as well as our very own Whitley Strieber. Whitley, I know he was very close to you, and you have held his torch up high, my friend.
Well, yeah. I went to Roger's first implant removal, and it was one of the most moving and extraordinary experiences of my life, because I had dreamed for so long of something like this. I had had people scanned with MRI scans. I had really worked to find this crucial physical evidence, and suddenly here it was. And not only was it something unusual coming out of a person's body in a place that shouldn't have been there, but it was encased in skin, meaning, and not only that, in this particular person, there was a scoop mark scar where the area immediately beneath the outer layer of skin had been removed in order to make the little sheath that it had been put in so the body wouldn't reject it. To me, this was absolute proof positive, because it was not something we could do. And I thought to myself, finally, we have what the skeptics community has been demanding. And I was elated by this. I had a friend at that time, Dr. William Mallow, who was the head of materials science at Southwest Research Institute in San Antonio, which is a major research institute, which had been founded by a family friend. And so I had a lot of friends involved in the institute, and as well as Dr. Mallow. And it wasn't hard. He was a very curious guy, a very powerful man, because he was obviously one of the world's leading materials scientists, right up there at the top of the heap. And I told him about this, and he said, well, you know, Whitley, I'll have to see it to believe it, but I'm not going to not see this. I want to see this. And so I called Roger and said, look, Roger, hold on to your hat, because Bill Mallow is a major guy, and he wants you to come over to Southwest and to show him implants. And over a period of 2 or 3 years, Roger went there frequently. But here's what happened. Now, remember, this is an institution that was founded in San Antonio by someone who had known me. I wouldn't say I was close to the man who founded it. I was a little boy when he died, but the family connections go deep, deep, deep there. And suddenly, Dr. Mallow is doing incredible work with us and with Bill, with Roger. We're for the first time getting a wealth of access to really top level equipment and one of the great material scientists of the world. And I'm thinking, well, he's going to publish on this. Then he sits me down and he tells me, the director has said that we can't even put this on letterhead.
Wow.
Because our CIA
credibility,
which is 47% of our budget, takes a dim view of UFO research.
They would have yanked that instantly.
Exactly. And so we kept doing it. And let me tell you the most extraordinary finding. And these findings all had been brought to an adequate level of scientific finish would have changed the world. But that was prevented. It was not that Dr. Mallow couldn't do it or didn't want to, but it was prevented. Let's understand this. This is over. George Knapp, a little earlier, was speculating that maybe Roger hadn't really proved it, but he did prove it. It's just that the right kind of papers weren't written, the right kind of work wasn't done by the right kind of people. But the problem is, those people were ready, willing, and able to do the work. They were prevented. But here's the most incredible of all of the stories. Roger said to me, he said, we have an object that has been emitting an FM signal. This is the first one we'd ever found. He'd ever found like this. And I've got it. And I want to take it to Southwest. I said, get on a plane. And we went out there. And we had, as it happened, I was making the NBC documentary Confirmation. So this is all on the documentary. And we went out there. And Bill analyzes the object under the SEM and regular microscope and so on and so forth. And we really didn't find it was different from the others. It was basically meteoric iron. And what in the world? Meteoric iron, a piece of meteoric iron is doing in a man's neck.
Yeah,
is another story. The skeptic people always say, oh, it was just in a person's foot. But they don't mention that it's in a person's neck, in their jaw, in their arm, in all kinds of different parts of their body. And in any case, we take it, and Bill says, well, you know, we can't see anything with the SEM except the surface. And if this was emitting an FM signal, then it must, maybe there's some kind of structure inside it. Let's take it over to UTSA and look in there. X-ray diffraction machine. Look at it. So we take it over there, and the machine goes through one cycle, and the thing makes a return. It's iron. I mean, of course it's going to return an X-ray. Another cycle, no return. Another cycle, no return. And it's gone X-ray invisible. Do you understand what I'm saying? This is a piece of iron that's suddenly X-ray invisible. So we take it back over to Southwest. We put it back in the SEM. Still the same exact composition, nickel iron. We take it back over to the X-ray diffraction machine. The scientist who runs it runs a couple of samples. The machine checks out. It's working perfectly. We put it in the machine. We ran it through cycle after cycle for 36 hours. It never showed up again. It was never visible again. Now, what I'm telling you about is a piece of extraordinary technology.
And he found those things.
He found it. Nobody cared. Nobody wants to hear it. The scientific community, this is a man, as I said at his funeral the other day, he is a man of historic importance, who made a gigantic breakthrough for and on behalf of the human species out of his courage, because this hurt him. Are you looking for donations for him? Because he did this. If he hadn't done this, he'd died a wealthy, successful podiatrist. Roger had a wonderful life. He collected cars. Antique cars. He was a pilot. He gave
he had a thriving practice.
They went after his license. He got sued. All the same crap that Dr. Mack went through. This is a man who gave his life for this. He gave everything. His family suffered for it. This must be recognized.
Well, we want you, Whitley, to help carry this on for a long, long time. Whitley Strieber, unknowncountry.com. Whitley, thank you so much. Jeremy Corbell, of course, is a filmmaker. He's a director. And, of course, knew Roger Lear. Hi, Jeremy. Welcome to the program.
Hey, George. Thanks for having me on.
Me too. I'm glad you're here with us. In the time we've got with you, Tell me a little bit about your association with Dr. Lear.
Okay, I'm going to be real direct here, okay? Dr. Roger was a kind human. He was a pioneer. He was an explorer of the human spirit. Just to be very direct, Dr. Roger Lear claimed to remove highly advanced implants, nanotechnology, microchips embedded by aliens, non-humans monitoring our Earth to study or manipulate the human race. So that's what I'm making a film about. Dr. Roger Lear had, you know, big questions, really big questions, but he also kind of left us with some disturbing answers, as one of your hosts, your co-hosts would say. So that's what this is about. I'm making a film. You can go to forbiddenreality.com and check it out. You know, Dr. Roger Lear was an incredible human, and I'm just so lucky to have met him in the remaining months of his life that he had.
Were you able to get as much material about him before he passed on?
Absolutely. Since the citizen hearing on Disclosure, which myself and Ruben Langdon, my co-producer, were putting on with Steve Bassett, we were able to film him from really that day forward, but primarily in the last number of months, and of course the last surgery with L.A. Marzulli and with Steve Colburn. I just want to say, like, Roger's research partner, he's kind of the future of this. I think Steve is. You know, the isotopic composition of what these objects are, that's the key to this mystery. There is still a mystery. Dr. Lear opened the door, and it is up to us to walk through. And so that's what this is for.
Tell us a little bit of the venue and how the video and the film will be available. Can people purchase it? Are they going to see it somewhere?
Yeah, that's still, you know, under question. I'm still in the edit. I was actually able to share with Dr. Lear the majority of the edit before he passed away, and I'm thankful to know that he loved it when he saw it. And essentially, I'm in the last part. There's still some steps that need to occur. We need to check out the isotopic ratio. As I said before, Steve Colburn's kind of the future of this. Like, you know, hopefully he's going to help out. But you'll see in Watchers 8 with L.A. Marzulli and his DP, Richard, like, you'll see a bunch of incredible footage. So altogether, I think the compilation of a human being is always, you know, the different perspectives that people bring to how they viewed him. And in my documentary, you will see who Dr. Roger Lear was as not just a researcher and an alien implant removal surgeon, allegedly, but also as a human being, you know, as an explorer, a pioneer. That's what I hope to convey. So,
and how did he seem to you, Jeremy, in the last days that you were with him?
He was yelling at me. He was fine. He was amazing. You know, I honestly didn't notice any change or anything. You know, he was so passionate, and that's what was so cool about him. He was a risk taker. He was a pioneer. He was a cowboy. You know, I mean, he really inspired me. I'm a young guy, and, you know, I had lunch with him and my family together in Santa Barbara. He's very passionate about the Wurlitzer organs. Do you know how he played the organ?
Yes. Yeah,
in Santa Barbara?
Great.
Yeah, at the Arlington Theater. So you'll see that in the teaser. So, I mean, essentially, go to ForbiddenReality.com, and you will see Dr. Roger Lear playing the Wurlitzer organ, and it was just absolutely amazing.
All right, Jeremy, you make sure you get a hold of us when you're ready to release that, okay? That will be fascinating indeed. Up next, Jose Escamilla, filmmaker, Mike Berra, author, researcher, Stephen Bassett from the Paradigm Research Group, and our own colleague Rob Simone. Join us as we talk about the life of the late Dr. Roger Lear. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, filmmaker, of course, Jose Escamilla with us, talking about the life of the late Roger Lear. Jose, I know he was special to you, too.
Thank you for doing this for Roger.
You're welcome.
I'm going to be very quick and stuff, man. You know, I met Roger and Jordan Maxwell back in 1994, November 1994, in Mesquite, Nevada. It was for the very first UFO Congress. And I was a new kid on the block at that time. I had been filming UFOs over Midway and Roswell, New Mexico since March 5th. And this was my very first lecture presentation. I was nervous, you know. And Roger, God bless him, I met him for the first time, and Jordan, and, you know, we became instant friends. and this friendship lasted till his passing. And I could talk about implants and all this kind of thing, but I want to give you some information about Roger that a lot of people didn't know. You know, Jeremy's doing a film on him, and he's bringing out that Roger was an organ player. The guy was great. The guy was a musician, man. He, and I didn't know this. And
he loved it.
Darn it. Huh?
He loved it.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, he asked me a couple of times to go with him to a couple of presentations, you know, at this place where the organ was. And he was getting this one organ replaced, and man, it was a massive thing. It was a pipe organ, and you know, it's just amazing what this man knew about these instruments, you know. And doggone it, I wish I would have taken the opportunity to go with him, but I was working on his last movie, the movie that I'm working on now, which will be finished in about 3 or 4 weeks. And you know, this is his favorite film, man. He came up with this. It's kind of a parody on Star Trek, but at the same time, they talk seriously about UFOs and societies, and it's a film that's going to be finished in 3 weeks. You know,
is it a documentary, and, Jose, or is it the an entertainment type film?
It's an entertainment film, and it's hilarious. Roger plays Captain Quark, okay, of the starship. Funny. It's the Gateway starship, and God bless him, man. He was so funny in this. It was amazing. He has this crew of people. You know, he's got Jordan Maxwell all dressed up as a cardinal, you know. But
He looks like a cardinal.
And they're traveling through space and giving aliens and all the people they meet information about Earth, you know. And Jordan does his old thing, panel discussion on secret societies and all that kind of stuff. Roger talks about the Brazilian UFO crash, you know, and it's just a hilarious film. It was all shot on green screen over at Ruben Langdon's studio. Ruben was the guy that portrayed one of the main characters on Avatar.
Yes,
and we shot that in October of 2012, sorry. And I've been working on this film, doing all the visual special effects, creating the aliens, creating the space shots, the virtual sets for their green screen appearances for 1 year and 4 months.
Wow. Sounds like you had fun doing this, Jose.
Oh, you know, Roger used to come here practically every week to look, you know, to check out what was going on and the visuals and everything else. I had spoken with Roger, George, the day... well, first of all, on the Sunday before he passed, he was here. He was not feeling too good.
That's right.
On the Monday, his health was really, really gone bad. By Wednesday, he's sounding terrible on the phone. I said, Roger, God bless you, brother. I hope that, you know, you feel better. All right. On Thursday, he was feeling a lot better and everything else. He says, Jose, tomorrow, which was Friday, the day that he passed, says, tomorrow I'm going to go to the hospital and get a procedure done at about 1 o'clock, 1:30 in the afternoon.
Oh, jeez.
And he was going to be here this past Sunday to see the new animations that I had done for him, man. I mean, doggone it, George. You know, and he said, I'll be there Sunday. And then my internet has been down and up and down, and I finally got a phone call Saturday morning, the Ides of March, you know, on the 15th. Mm-hmm. And I heard that he passed, and I, you know, it just devastated me, George, because you know what? I've known Roger for 20 years, and we have laughed, we have cried together, and although, you know, his research, forget it, it's phenomenal. I mean, he's the guy that founded the proof that there is something mysterious going on in the world with these implants and things, but on a personal level, I knew him as a great soul. He was a good person, man.
He sure was. And Jose, with your work, you let him live forever, and that's fantastic. Stephen Bassett, of course, heads up the Paradigm Research Group, of course, and the Disclosure Project. Stephen, this has got to strike very close to home for you.
Yes. it was a terrible loss. Let me say something that maybe some of the other tributes have not said, George. In the early 1990s, John Mack entered this field and started investigating contactees. He was a Harvard professor. His setup was in Cambridge, just down the street from Harvard. He was a renowned intellectual. He had a Pulitzer Prize for an intellectual biography of T.H. Lawrence. And so he started investigating it. He was working with contactees. He wrote a book called Abduction, Human Encounters with Aliens. And what happened when Mac did this is that he provided legitimacy to the stories that have been coming forward and to all contactees throughout the United States, throughout the world, that one way or another is going to be touched by Mac's efforts. And there are millions of contactees, George, and they're in the closet and they can't talk in many cases, and they don't know for sure if it's real. That legitimacy brought a great deal of comfort to a lot of people. And then Roger Lear comes forward. Mac was talking to people. He was taking accounts. Roger was actually examining hard evidence that contactees claimed were being put into their bodies, real material research. And so essentially, Dr. Lear took it up another step, and he provided even more legitimacy to the contactees who are in the closet.
You know, he will be missed. There may be others who will eventually do some of his work, Stephen, but this field has seen these people go time and time again.
Look, you know, I've talked to physicians over the last 18 years that knew this was real, that had mentioned they'd seen some implants. There was one group that was thinking about getting involved. The fact is none of them have stepped forward. Roger was essentially alone in this. This says a great deal about, professional doctors, but someone will come and take his place. But again, he has helped legitimize this issue for millions of contactees, brought them comfort. He was able to present his information at the 2009 X conference and then give a press conference afterwards at CNN. Was there. He was thrilled about that. And of course, Roger was able to testify at the citizen hearing on disclosure last May. And I'm so glad that we got him in there, that he was able to do that. Same for Jesse Marcel Jr. That testimony is going to get spread all over the world. And they certainly deserve it. Tomorrow, I'm going to be attending. A group of people are getting together for a memorial kind of picnic to celebrate Roger's life. And I'll be thinking of you, George, and all the help that you've brought to us, including Roger.
Thank you, Stephen. He will always, always in heaven remember what you did for him. Stephen Bassett, Paradigm Research Group. And, of course, Mike Barra, noted author, researcher in his own right. Hey, Mike, thank you for letting us know what was going on when this all was coming down.
Yeah, I just, I saw Shana's post that, made it clear that she'd lost her dad, and I just was really overwhelmed at that moment and remembered, Roger as a person. And I can't talk too much about his contributions to the field. I mean, other people, Jose, and you know better than that, and I mean, than I do about it. And Whitley Strieber, of course, just did a beautiful job of telling you about all the things that Roger did. I can only speak to the guy I knew as a person. And when I first started getting involved in this stuff after Dark Mission came out in 2007, I got to go do the Bay Area UFO Expo. You remember that? They used to do that up in San Francisco. And I didn't know anybody. At least I wasn't known to anybody. And, I was going around introducing myself to various people. And before I could even say hi, Roger said, "Hey, you're Mike Barra." And I don't know how the hell he knew who I was, but he kind of brought me in and just said it was good to meet me and that he'd enjoyed the book. And, asked me a lot of questions, and there was an event, like a Meet the Speakers event that night, and I didn't really know who to hang with, and he was there with Shana, and he said, come on over to our table, and took me under his wing and made me feel comfortable. He came to my lecture the next day, which made me feel really good and relaxed, and I got through my first really big lecture, and then I thought, okay, that was great, thanks a lot, it was wonderful, and then there was the Central Coast UFO Symposium, I think it was, that he put on up in Santa Maria. And that's the first time I met you, I believe. And again, I didn't expect him to remember me. And I first time he saw me, he's like, he just walked across the room. Hey, Mike, how you doing? You know, I'm glad you're here and you're going to be on a panel. And just an incredibly inclusive person, brought me in, didn't have any reason to be nice to me because there's nothing I could have done to really help him. And, you know, I just realized that I got off to a good start in doing what I'm getting to do now. But a lot because of the fact that he was so nice to me and he helped me get that confidence and move forward. And, you know, that just speaks volumes about him as a person. And you know, to me, what I will always remember is just his kindness, his inclusiveness, what a wonderful man he was, what an obviously great father he was. And it really, you know, how do you replace these people? You don't. You just adapt. Without them, and you move forward, and you hope that somebody else can and do the same kinds of work that he was able to do. But just a wonderful guy.
I'm in Boise, Idaho, and this morning I was talking to the people in charge of this event, and they were talking about Kenneth Arnold and what happened in 1947 and his sightings and everything else out in this area. And it's just an amazing field, Michael, that so many people, yourself included, have devoted your time and energy and resources to trying to get these answers. And, you know, you got to take our hats off to you folks.
Well, you know, the thing is, George, is not everybody in this business is a nice person. Let's just say that. But Roger Lear was as nice a human being as you could ever hope to be.
He was dedicated. He was kind. And he was a darn good researcher, Michael.
And you know, he made contributions until I heard Whitley Strieber speak about him. I didn't even really know that he had done some of those things. And you know, I try to stay on top of this. So I think it's really the responsibility of all of us that remember him to make sure that he's not forgotten and to make sure his work doesn't go to waste.
Good. Thank you, Michael, for being part of this. And of course, we're going to wrap up our tribute to Dr. Roger Lear by going to my colleague and ufologist in his own right, Rob Simone. Hey, Robbie, how are you?
Hey, George, it's good to be with you again, although under unfortunate situation.
Yeah, it sure is. Tell me, you know, you have interviewed a lot of people in the UFO field, and you've had exposure to Roger Lear. How would you categorize him with the other people that you've talked to?
Well, I first met Roger in the late 90s, and ever since then, I came to realize that he is someone, not only is he a great thinker, and a great seeker of the truth himself, but he did something that nobody else was able to do. And he got this message out to the world that alien abductions, although for some people they're at the furthest end of the spectrum for believability, yield, in many cases, some of the best physical evidence. And so that accomplishment will ring throughout the ages. And I think sets him apart from anybody else really in the field.
Have you in your career, Rob, interviewed anybody quite like him?
There's no, I mean, who else could be like Roger Lear? He's a nice guy. He is someone who always went out of his way to help people. And he is someone that, as it's been mentioned before, put himself on the line. He had a successful podiatry practice, and he didn't have to do the things he did, but he was a cool guy. And he just said, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm going to further this. He felt a calling that went above and beyond the mundane sort of material urges that most people have. He is a real superhero. And I think after the sadness, and after the mourning, there is one thing he would want us to do, and that is everybody in the Coast to Coast family to keep going and to redouble our efforts, because the cover-up and the secrecy surrounding this issue is nothing less than a crime against humanity.
If Roger were on the air with us today, Rob, he'd say, party on, folks. Party on.
That's exactly what he would say.
He's that kind of guy. You know, when I was with you at the UFO Congress a few months ago, and you got that ovation when I introduced you. It was so cool to see that. You have been a great part of this program over the last few years, and more opportunities coming. And you know, it's just great to have people like you, Rob, who are in this, who devote your time and energies to it. And you know, I just got to tell you, I'm very impressed with your work.
Thank you so much, George. And again, you know, Dr. Lear inspired me. I met him at the very early stages of when I was working for Citizens Against UFO Secrecy. And so he will continue to be an inspiration, not only to me, but to all the listeners of Coast and all the people around the world who've been touched by his work.
A few minutes left, Rob, and I want you to leave us with some thoughts on just how you think this field is going to unfold. You know, I've always told Stephen Bassett, I don't think there's going to be disclosure, Steve. It's not going to come from government, maybe from a whistleblower or something like that. How do you think this plays out?
Well, given that we have this physical evidence from Roger's work, I think the bell of disclosure has already rung, not just because of his efforts, but because of all the sightings, of all the testimony that's come forward, the witnesses, of all the mountain of evidence for people who really look at this issue, and that's what's required to get an understanding of it, they will come to the conclusion that the bell of disclosure has already rung, and it's going to keep ringing as long as we have people like you, people like me, people like all the rest of the ufologists keep tugging on the ropes.
They're not all laughing about this topic anymore, are they?
This has become a legitimate field of discussion. Coast to Coast single-handedly has put these terms into the modern lexicon, like the grays and these other things that we hear popping up, ancient aliens. All the stuff now that's out there, all the people that you see on these cable shows were part of this once very small family. So if you think about it,
that's right.
Going back like 20 years ago, Richard Dolan and everybody else, all our the little group that we used to hang out with, we're the ones now on television talking. We're the talking heads. And we've ended up changing the world. A small group of committed people have now been responsible for creating more content on this subject matter than anybody else. That is the success story right there.
You got that. Robbie, have a good weekend, okay?
Thanks, George. God bless.
Rob Simone. And of course, all of this was made possible because of the work of Art Bell. All of this. He created this. He merely gave me the baton, and I just ran with it, and we'll keep on running. This has been our tribute to the late Dr. Roger Lear.